You're listening to Valley Edition. Assembly Republicans have a new leader in Sacramento, and she's from the Central Valley. Modesto's Kristen Olson joins us now on our program. Assemblymember Olson, welcome.
Good morning, Joe.
It's thanks so much for joining us today, and congratulations on your new post. It's no surprise that Sacramento is dominated by members of the other party. What do you hope to accomplish in leading the Assembly Republicans in this coming year?
Well, Connie Conway, another leader from the Valley, has been a great leader for our caucus, and I hope to be able to build on her success in the coming months. I'm committed to unifying our party to make sure that we win elections and that we can help make the California that we know the golden state once again. To do that, we need to lay out a clear vision of solution-focused policies that will attract good jobs and great schools to our state.
Now, you have a background in education. I know that's an issue that's near and dear to you. Republicans talk a lot about school choice and things. What other things do you support in trying to reform California's education system? Common Core is the latest political football that's out there, but is there something else that we should be looking at there?
There are a number of reforms that we need to make to our education system in order to make sure that all of our kids, regardless of their backgrounds, their geographies, have access to a top-quality education that will set them up for success, not only in school, but in life. And I think the Vergara decision that recently came out of the Los Angeles Superior Court provides some good first steps toward making sure that we have an effective teacher in every single classroom. And that will be one of the priorities of our caucus moving forward. We've had a few successes, but we have a long way to go to make sure that we're doing the very best we can for all kids in California.
A few weeks ago, incoming Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon made some comments about how he thinks the state's high-speed rail program should be built in Southern California. In doing so, he also made some comments about Central California, saying nobody lives there, that it's tumbleweeds. Do you think that speaks to not so much a political issue, and we can talk about high-speed rail later, but the geographic divides in this state and maybe how little understanding, if not respect, Southern California and the Bay Area have for the Central Valley?
Absolutely. One of my concerns as a lawmaker, particularly one from the San Joaquin Valley, has been that growing divide between our inland and our coastal communities. We need leaders who will bring regions together. California will be stronger economically, will bring more vitality and prosperity back to our state if we can capitalize on the strengths of our separate regions. And while we do have challenges in the San Joaquin Valley, we also have great strengths. We're the agricultural capital of the world, and we are very important to the economic base of California. And so, frankly, it was insulting, demeaning, and condescending to hear one of the leaders of our state speak about those of us who call the Central Valley our home in such an arrogant way. It also, however, needs to be instructive to those of us, Republicans and Democrats alike, who represent the San Joaquin Valley, in that we need to do a better job of promoting the value of the Central Valley, promoting the great amenities that are here. I mean, for crying out loud, Fresno is one of the largest cities in the entire nation, and we need to talk about those strengths. Not a whole lot of things unite Democrat and Republican lawmakers in California, but this is one of those things where Central Valley members will be banding together to promote the people who live here.
And I should say that Senator DeLeon did walk back those comments a little bit and apologized. Speaking of agriculture, we already have a water bond on the November ballot, but in the past few weeks in Sacramento, the big push is to get a different water bond on the ballot. So far, that has been unsuccessful. You have a variety of interest groups on both sides who all want to see their own projects preserved in the effort to cut down this $11 billion bond to a more reasonable number. At what point does this become an exercise in futility? Do you think that we're going to have two water bonds on the ballot, or is it going to be the one that voters or that the legislature and governor approved several years ago and that had been delayed for so long that actually winds up before voters?
Well, if we want a water bond to be successful, we need to make sure there is only one water bond on the ballot and that it is created in such a way that emphasizes storage as the most important priority. I know just earlier before I joined you on the show, you were talking about water recycling, and there's so many great things we can do if we start to be very innovative about water recycling projects. When I was on the Modesto City Council, even back in 2005, we started on a project, and it has taken way too long for that to be completed. So we need to streamline bureaucracy so that those efforts can move forward. But we could recycle every drop of water in the state, and we still wouldn't have enough if we don't increase our water storage capacity. And so those are the things I'm going to be working on moving forward to make sure that we can construct a bond that puts storage as the top priority, that also encourages further recycling and conservation and desalination efforts, and that also makes sure the tunnels are not included as part of the package.
Speaking of the tunnel project, that is very controversial. Folks in different parts of the valley feel differently on that issue. What are your thoughts on BDCP, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and the governor's plans for these twin tunnels? I take it that you're more in support of storage projects rather than that?
Absolutely. And, you know, sort of a two-pronged way I'll answer that. As it relates to the water bond, it's really important that nothing in the bond facilitate the tunnels project, because all data and research has shown that if there is a funded opposition campaign, that the water bond is not likely to pass at the polls. And so for any of us who care about solving our water crisis in California, it's really important that the tunnels not be part of the bond. Now, separately from that, obviously Governor Brown wants to see BDCP and the tunnels project move forward on its own. I believe that would be a mistake. We've had the chief deputy director of the Department of Water Resources admit on the record that in a dry year like this one, the tunnels project would not deliver a single additional drop of water to any part of California. Well, then why are we investing anywhere between $25 and $67 billion on that project? There are more important infrastructure projects that could put people to work and that could increase water supply, and the Delta Tunnels BDCP project is not one of them.
And with all due respect, though, one could say the very same thing about funding new reservoir storage capacity in a year like this, whether it's a tunnel or a reservoir. It wouldn't necessarily help the folks this year, correct?
Although, interestingly enough, Southern California is not as in, certainly we're all facing problems from the drought, but Southern California residents aren't as in dire straits as many other parts in California to the east and the north, because they've worked really hard to build storage projects down there. So we need to start doing that as a state as well. But you're absolutely correct. There's not a whole lot we can do to provide immediate relief beyond what the state has already done. What we need to do now is make sure that we're laying the plans and doing the projects today so that we can avoid being in a similar situation in the future.
A little later on in our program, we're going to talk with Joe Matthews, who has a new column out that's running statewide this week about how the San Joaquin Valley is at the nexus of most of the big issues facing the state right now, whether it's prison realignment or high-speed rail or these water projects, or, you know, you can go down the list on and on and on. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on, you know, the Valley is often overlooked in some respects in Sacramento or in the major power centers in the Bay Area and L.A., but when it comes to these major issues, we are often at the forefront of dealing with these problems the state faces.
Absolutely. And in the past 4 years that I've served in the State Assembly, that's been a very important priority of mine, to make sure that I am positioning my district, the 12th Assembly District, and this whole San Joaquin Valley so that we can be the recipient of economic growth projects as well. We have 24% unemployment or poverty rates in this state. In the San Joaquin Valley, we have the highest unemployment rates in the state and in the nation, and we need to do everything we can to provide economic growth policies that will allow families to provide for themselves and get good-paying jobs. And that's actually going to be one of my goals as leader as well, is to implement a lasting structure for success. And part of that involves rebranding ourselves, demonstrating that we care about people and their daily struggles, and that we're people just like them, moms, dads, workers, small business owners, who want to be able to prosper in this state. And part of that, not only for the San Joaquin Valley, but for all parts of California, is making sure that we are offering solutions that will bring good, stable jobs to our state and that will lower taxes on individuals and families and small businesses.
You mentioned rebranding. There's been a lot of consternation about the state of the Republican Party in California and where it's going moving forward. Do you feel that this is primarily a messaging problem? That's why Republicans don't have more representation in Sacramento? Or is it, as some are saying, it's a policy thing and this party needs to evolve some of its policies on different things or evolve its outreach and approach to issues like immigration and some social issues?
Well, part of it, I think, is a reflection that Californians in general are feeling disenfranchised by both parties. We're seeing party registrations go down and decline to state numbers go up. And I think to some degree, that's a reflection of people being so tired of the bickering. You know, they want elected officials who will work really hard to get results. And so as Republicans, it's incumbent upon us to demonstrate that we are ready and willing and eager to be that solution-focused party that will bring California great jobs, great schools, an accountable and efficient government. And so we do need to do a better job at promoting those core principles, refining our message, and then articulating that message to people in all parts of California. You know, we want to embrace the diversity of our state, not only demographically with men, women, and young people, but also geographically. We need to start going places that historically may have been Democratic strongholds because we have a winning message. We have winning policies, but we need to articulate those to people so that we can be able to convince them to rejoin the party, rebuild the Republican Party in California. And I think by doing that, over time, we will begin to see economic prosperity return to the Golden State.
We've been speaking with incoming Assembly Minority Leader Kristen Olson from Modesto. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Joe. Always great to talk with you.